Hello again. This is Kristen Tessera, VitFriends med student, here to interview Dr. Anna Christina Garza Mayers today. She's a pediatric dermatologist at Mass General Hospital, and I hope you'll all enjoy hearing a little bit about her work and her research into vitiligo. Our podcasts are being sponsored by My Vitiligo Team, and happy to be back with you today. Enjoy this episode. Welcome, Dr. Garza Mayers. If you could tell us a little bit about yourself, that would be great.
Sure. Thank you for having me. I am a pediatric dermatologist at Massachusetts General Hospital. So I did a dermatology residency here in Boston and a pediatric dermatology fellowship in Worcester. And now I practice at Mass General and I see almost entirely children, and I see really all dermatology conditions, but I have a special interest in vitiligo and in pigment concerns on the skin.
That's awesome. So what was the origin of your interest in vitiligo?
It really actually started during my fellowship. UMass in Worcester, people might know, has a vitiligo center. Dr. John Harris is the chair of the department, and he's the head of that center, and he's really a leading researcher in vitiligo. And it was an excellent experience for me because so many people come to see him really just for his expertise, and he has all kinds of research that is going on. He has a very active clinic. He has a lab where he does basic research. He owns a company. So he's doing a lot of active research looking at therapeutics in vitiligo. And I was able to be a part of his clinics and do some research with him. And it was really exciting to kind of see. I think it's an area where there's a lot coming around the corner and a lot that still needs to be done. You know, I think patients that still really need our help.
Definitely. So drawing on your experience in your fellowship and now at Mass General, can you run me through the process of diagnosing a child with vitiligo?
Sure. So it is usually what we would call a clinical diagnosis, which means that we meet and we do an exam and we take a history, but we usually don't need to do a biopsy. We don't have to do a sample of the skin to make the diagnosis. So it's a matter of meeting with someone, looking all over. It's really important if everyone feels comfortable that we look everywhere on the skin. Anywhere that you have skin, you could potentially have a spot of involved skin. And we usually look with two types of light. We look at the regular light in the room, and then also with something called a Woods lamp. And so that looks almost like a blue light, or I guess a black light is what it would be called. And that helps the spots to light up a little bit more and can help with making the diagnosis as well.
Great. And when diagnosing a child with vitiligo, how do you explain the condition to their families and then separately to them?
That's a good question. I think that the most important thing to keep in mind is that it is a chronic condition. And so we don't yet have a way to cure vitiligo. And it's important to understand that from the beginning, just in terms of we want to have a relationship and we want to help as much as possible. And there will be ups and downs, but generally we don't fully understand what causes it. And so sometimes people will ask, you know, was it this? Was it that? Was it something I ate? Was it something I did? And for the most part, really, no, there's nothing that you could have done differently, and people should feel okay with that, that they, you know, there wasn't anything that anybody did. And that, you know, we will, in a lot of cases, people have a lot of good luck getting their pigment back, but, you know, getting all of your pigment back is not something that we necessarily strive for, just in terms of, you know, setting, realistic expectations.
That makes sense. And you touched on this a little bit already, but if there are any others, what are some common questions you get from children specifically when they're diagnosed with vitiligo?
That's a good question. And I didn't, you know, you asked about how we talk to the child about it in particular. And it's a good thing to think about. I don't know that I have thought about it in that way. I think in general, when I'm in an appointment, I do try to talk to the child. But kids are so resilient. You know, I think for the most part, I don't want to say that they don't notice or they're not bothered, because you can be, and that's definitely within the spectrum of normal. But I think I try to focus again, as I mentioned, on the fact that no one did anything, to make it happen. I think one thing to keep in mind is, as with treatment with any chronic disease, you got to keep at it. It's something that, you know, probably every day, at least every week, you're thinking about what you're doing. And that, you know, with a kid, sometimes they're into that and sometimes they're not. And I think it's important to meet them where they are and to help them find something that they really want to do. And sort of within the amount that they are concerned about their skin and the amount that they're able to put towards caring for it. So for instance, you and I have talked about this before with phototherapy, which is a great tool, but can be a lot, you know, especially if you're going into a doctor's office 3 times a week, that doesn't fit with everybody's schedule. And so suggesting something that doesn't fit for someone is not really helpful for them in the end.
Right, right. Definitely. And again, you've touched on this a good amount, but what is unique about treating children with vitiligo as compared to adults? And are there any obstacles that you think children face more in seeking treatment than adults?
I think right now the biggest obstacle is that some of our treatments aren't approved at the younger ages. And so I don't know that there's anything very different. I think a lot of the things that work in adults work in kids. I think that there is a little bit more. So topical ruxolitinib is what the newest topical treatment and is not approved under the age of 12. And so I have very limited ability to give that to patients, even though I think, you know, probably their vitiligo would behave the same as an adult, but we don't yet have FDA approval for that. I think other things are just in terms of, again, working with kids and thinking about, you know, are they able to put something on twice a day? Are they able to come into the office 3 times a week? You know, they can't just mosey in by themselves. Someone has to bring them in, and everyone has a busy schedule. And so those are probably the things that we think about the most with children.
That makes sense. And in addition to the wonderful groups that VitFriends has for kids and teens, what are some resources that you point your patients to who have vitiligo?
Probably one of the biggest ones is the Global Vitiligo Foundation. And they actually will often point people back to VitFriends because they have a large database of local support groups. And so I think it's a little bit circular. I think also people I've heard from patients at least that they've had luck finding Facebook communities that they can be a part of and you know, kind of meet other families and patients and you know, share their experiences with each other.
Definitely. And you talked a little bit about the new topicals. What is on the horizon for treatment of vitiligo in children?
Yes. So there are, or soon, hopefully, there are going to be clinical trials of topical ruxolitinib in children under the age of 12. And we, again, have high hopes that it will behave similarly. And we hope to be able to use it in a safe way once it's FDA approved. There are also studies for oral JAK inhibitors, and that is in adults and then also in children above the age of 12, so adolescents, really. And that is ongoing currently, actually. So I know at MGH, Mass General, we are enrolling patients. You have to fit a certain kind of subset of a type of vitiligo, but if there was any interest in that, myself and our clinical trials head is Dr. Jeff Yu, are always happy to meet with people and talk with them and figure out if they are a good option or if that is a good option for them and their treatment.
Absolutely. Wonderful. And I have had the privilege of getting to work with you on research. So would love to hear what is on the horizon for research besides these clinical trials.
Yeah. So as you know, for the work that I'm doing, at least you and I are doing together in research is not so much based on the treatments that are available themselves, but around this question of access to treatment. So as we talked about with phototherapy in particular, if doing a little bit more research to put some data behind if there are actual barriers to accessing treatment, which you and I both think there are, and based on you know our experience with patients and talking with people and hopefully putting some data behind that to help with advocacy efforts to get people access to medications and also to treatments, you know, phototherapy at home, phototherapy units, The other research question that we have is that there is some data in adults, to support an association of vitiligo with hearing loss. And so we know vitiligo is associated with thyroid disease. You know, if you are diagnosed with vitiligo, we generally recommend that you have your thyroid hormones checked at least once. And so you and I are looking to see if there is an association with hearing loss, because that would also be an important thing to check, especially in a child who, you know, is in school, is functioning socially and educationally. And so if there is any concern, that we would want that seen as soon as possible. So those are the kinds of questions that we're asking right now.
Absolutely. And have very much enjoyed looking into those areas. My last question for you, and I guess we can keep this broad, but what was the most meaningful experience or most meaningful interaction you've had with a patient with vitiligo or in the vitiligo community?
You know, the first thing that comes to mind is actually that you very kindly invited me to a meeting, a VitFriends meeting, and that was really great for me. Everyone was so welcoming to each other and to me, and, you know, kind of got together and talked about all kinds of things within the community. You guys, there was the big advocacy day here in Massachusetts recently, and that is amazing to know that, you know, there are things that are frustrating for us as providers and frustrating for patients. And so everyone is working together to try to make things better. I think that that's amazing. And then, of course, there is always, you know, you have moments in clinic with individuals who, you know, you're trying to help. And I think it's really nice to have patients that you see again and again. Probably on the one hand, you know, you're seeing them because they're not, it's the chronic condition. They're not all the way better. So that, you know, is one thing. But I think, you're working together and to have people just get better and have repigmentation is really, it's why we keep doing what we do.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for all you do for kids with all kinds of skin conditions.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode with Dr. Garza Mayers. Again, my name is Kristen, and I look forward to bringing you another episode with another vitiligo expert next month. We are sponsored by My Vitiligo Teams. Thank you so much for listening, and hope you have a great rest of your day.